Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been cold and snowy out there, but the world has turned, and we're certainly aware of it out on the prairie. Spring starts on Wednesday, and all of the fish houses are off the lake, and the snow is starting to melt. Rain is forecast for this next week. Every so often you come across a fly flying around your kitchen, snow melting and people hearing water dripping from the eaves. And as the snow melts, people find things out in the yard that they haven't seen since January. Some snow shovels out there, oddly, and a highball glass sitting in deep snow. Why is that there? And gloves, of course, and things that dogs have hauled out of the garbage can. And here is this odd little Tupperware dish that some child's mother fixed for him to take in his school lunch in his brown bag. It's a little Tupperware dish, and it has a lovely salad in it. Why is this out here in a snowbank? Clint Bunsen was walking through the snow, and he saw something white in the snow, and he reached down and he picked it up, and it was a handkerchief. It was a very expensive sort of lace handkerchief with a lacy hand-sewn border around it, the sort of thing that you would never blow your nose on. He put it to his nose, and it smelled of flowers, like gardenias, like frozen gardenias. It was amazing to smell this coming out of the snow, this beautiful handkerchief. And then he heard his wife say, "What are you doing with that?" He said, "I was smelling it. I thought it might be yours." She said, "Why would I have dropped my handkerchief in the snow?" Good question. He said, "I just thought maybe it was somebody." She said, "You don't know where that's been." She was just getting out of the car. She had two big bags of groceries in her arms. She was taking them into the house. He said, "It's been in the snow. That's where it's been. Put that back." She said, "You don't know who's touched that." He was thinking about who had touched it, actually. It was a woman's handkerchief, and it smelled of flowers that do not grow in Lake Wobegon. He said, "I thought I would put it up on the porch in case she might come back for it." So he did, and he's been thinking about that for a few days, imagining some olive-skinned woman knocking on his door and holding up the handkerchief and saying, "Gracias, señor," showing him where her initials are written. "Escribiendo," she says. People think of odd things in Lake Wobegon. One's fantasy life is encouraged as the weather gets warmer because this is that season. I don't know of anybody who's fallen in love during a real hard cold snap. Can't think of anybody. You think about other things. Your blood rushes to your head rather than other places. But as soon as it gets warm, it brings on that season of foolishness, like Cummings wrote, "Holy to be a fool while spring is in the world. My blood approves," and people are apt to become 17 again suddenly, without any warning, which is not necessarily something you would want. You might prefer to have common sense and a good health insurance policy. But 17 can come over you suddenly, like a case of the flu, and there's nothing for you to do but just to be in love and to float along with it and hope that you survive somehow. There was a possum last summer who fell in love with a cat in Lake Wobegon, even though the cat did all she could to discourage this. And finally, through sheer persistence, the possum wore her down, and they formed some kind of relationship. They slept together in a big box in a garage in Lake Wobegon. It was an oddity. People would come and take a look at them, though they were rather shy about the whole thing. And then the owners of the cat started to worry about rabies. And so they captured the possum. It took them a while. They had to chase the possum around the garage, and they got him with a butterfly net. And they had to wrestle him into a cardboard box, and he just started hyperventilating on the way to the vet's office and passed out or something. They thought he was dead, and they stopped the car to bury him there in the ditch, and the possum leaped to life, and he dashed away. They were 17 miles from home, and the possum headed back in the direction of their house. They drove back home, and when they got home, the cat was missing. They didn't see either of them for a month and a half. And then they were driving down the highway, and suddenly they saw the cat and the possum together crossing the road. And they tried to swerve, but they ran over them, and they heard the kabump, kabump, kabump under the car. And they looked in the rearview mirror, and there the possum was lying flat on the road, and the cat was sniffing the possum and poking at him with her nose. They stopped the car, and they got out, and when they got out, the possum leaped to its feet, and the two of them tore off into the woods. A love story. It's nothing that a person is ever particularly proud of, because you know that when you are in love, you are stupid. You know this in a small town where you have an opportunity to observe people up close, and you come to rely on their intelligence, and then suddenly they fall in love, and they get this sort of dim, stunned look in their eye, as if they've been hit upside the head with an oar, as if they've fallen out of a tree onto their head or something, and they're dazed. Pastor Inkvis sees this when couples come in for marriage counseling. They have this stunned look, and they're nervous because they're afraid that he's going to ask them about you know what, but he doesn't, because he knows the answer. So he just talks about responsibility and about communication, and can you talk things out? And they look at him with that stupid look in their eye, and they say sure, yeah, right. And so he goes ahead and marries them anyway, even though they don't seem to have the brains that God gave geese, but somehow it works out. The butcher falls in love, and instead of lamb chops, he gives you liver. The snowplow operator falls in love, and he goes up and down the county roads knocking down mailboxes. Your auto mechanic falls in love, and you're not surprised when you start up the car and you turn on the radio and the windshield wipers go back and forth. It's not a particularly proud moment in a person's life. Darlene, the waitress at the Chatterbox Cafe, thought that she was all over it after she and Arvin got that painful divorce. And she went for 2 years. She said, never again, never again. And then you could see her standing at the window looking off down the road, looking for that handsome stranger to come driving into town in a Cadillac, even though there's never been any in the past. But she was hopeful. She was waiting. She went online. She looked for somebody in chat rooms. She met this guy, and they got to talking, and they got instant messaging, the two of them. And they just, something happened to her. It just hit her hard. She fell in love with him, and pretty soon she was typing faster than she's ever typed in her life. She was typing 100 words a minute, and they were crazy about each other. And then she asked him to send a photograph, and he sent a picture, and she knew it was a fake. It was from a Calvin Klein ad. She'd seen this before. It was kind of a handsome, wiry guy with about a week's growth of beard, and he was standing at a bus stop in his underwear, and black underwear, and she just didn't think anybody from Duluth would do that. And so she dropped him. She could see him typing in the instant message box. What's the matter? Did I say something wrong? Have you gone away? Did you get my photograph? Did I send you the right one? I don't really know how to do this downloading. Maybe I sent you the wrong one. Oh, he was lying through his teeth. He was lying, and she knew it, and she dropped him, and she canceled the instant messaging. But now it's getting warm again. And she's standing at the window of the cafe, and she's looking off down the road with that dreamy look in her eye. There's a couple who come into the Chatterbox Cafe. They're an old couple, and they sit there for lunch, and they have the same tuna fish hot dish and the same Jell-O salad and the same banana cream pie. And to look at them, you would think possibly this was an arranged marriage, that nothing surprising ever happened to this pair in their life. But you would be wrong about that. They simply don't tell it, that's all. They don't tell you that story, how they were fascinated with each other, so fascinated they saw each other across a crowded dance floor and they couldn't take their eyes off each other, though they tried to take turns staring. He drove by her house late at night 12, 20, 30 times, fascinated by her. She thought of nobody but him. For weeks at a time, she was fired from her job because she was just so distracted. She worked in a doctor's office. They were afraid that she would kill somebody. And finally, though he thought that she was seeing somebody else, he got up his courage to tell her that he would like to see her. It took them weeks to cross that bridge. And when they crossed that bridge, they crossed the next six bridges in about 2 days, just zoom. This went straight forward, and the surf was crashing on the shore, and the herons rose up from the swamp, and the horses galloped across the meadow, and so forth. And they were an item. They were lovers, and they were ecstatic. They were filled with bliss, except they had this itch. They had this odd off-balance feeling to them. He felt that he wasn't worthy of her, and he confessed this one night. He said, "I know that you hate cigars, and I smoke cigars, and I'm gonna quit them for you, and I'm also gonna lose weight because I know it's a problem." "No," she said, "it's not a problem. I don't like some cigars, but I like your cigars. Your cigars are fine." No, he said, "I know. I've seen the look in your eyes. I'm gonna quit cigars, and I'm gonna give them up for you." No, don't do that," she said. "Don't lose weight," she said. "I'd like to have something to hold on to," she said. No, he was going to lose weight. He was going to do it for her, and he was going to give up cigars. And he tried for a month, and when he couldn't do it, and when he gained 15 pounds in the process, he was so disgusted with himself that he got in his pickup truck and he left Lake Wobegon and he drove west across North Dakota with two bottles of Jack Daniels and $150, just weeping to himself. He just careened from one small town bar to another, just making a fool of himself, and wound up in Butte, Montana, got roaring drunk and walked down the main street of Butte singing lovesick blues at the top of his voice, and people who happened to like that song called the sheriff. And he was arrested for disturbing the peace, and he was thrown into the county jail in with a couple of bad eggs called Izzy and Dizzy, who were in for larceny. And 6 days before he was to be released from the county jail, these two idiots, his roommates, whipped out this smuggled zip gun from under their bunk, and they used him as a human shield to make their escape. And they climbed into a cop car, and they headed north at 2 o'clock in the morning at high speed over gravel roads with a chopper up in the air behind them and blue lights flashing behind them. They were driving pell-mell and they just blew their way through a roadblock at the Canadian border, and they took off across plowed fields at 80 miles an hour. He was just bouncing off the ceiling, sitting in the back seat. Like many desperados, they were not wearing their seatbelts. And so they were careening around. The door handle came off in his hand. He couldn't jump out of the car. They went through a farmyard. They sort of bounced off a chicken coop, and they ran into a propane tank, which blew up. And they were captured, and they were all banged up badly. He was banged up the worst. He spent 3 months in a hospital out in Butte, Montana, and then he had to do more time in jail. And then he got out and he felt even worse about himself. And he hooked up with this other woman and he didn't like her at all. But they were together for a while because he thought that it was all he was worthy of. But she was addicted to mentholated cigarettes. Mentholated cigarettes. She smoked about 6 packs a day. And that finally cured him of smoking. He stopped smoking. And he was so and he gave up drinking, and so he lost some weight. And he finally sent a Hallmark Get Well card to his girlfriend back in Lake Wobegon. He said, "I've learned my lesson. I am who I am, and you are the light of my life." He called her up on the phone, and her mother answered and said, "She's not here. She's out with Bob." Well, then he fell off the wagon, and then he was living in Minneapolis, and he lived in a cardboard box under a bridge for a while, and he went into the Salvation Army. And then, just desperate one night, he drove back to Lake Wobegon, and it turned out that Bob was her cousin. They were reunited after being apart for a year and a half, and they married in a fever over her parents' violent opposition. And that was 45 years ago. And now they sit there eating their tuna noodle casserole with peas in it, green jello, sliced bananas, maraschino cherries, little Miracle Whip on top, banana cream pie. You'd never know to look at it. It happens to the best of us. And that's why in Lake Wobegon, we don't go for salsa. We don't go for hot sauce. We avoid spices that might stir up the blood. We're careful what sort of dancing we do. We mainly prefer the polka and the schottische for fear that it may happen, which now it has happened. It is spring. It's here. Be careful. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average. Thank you.